Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Art of Allowance podcast.
You know, as a family, we love thrifting, and she's really into fashion, but thankfully she loves to buy secondhand. And so we go to Goodwill and Salvation Army and we shop for things secondhand, which allows her to change her mind a lot as she changes her style. It doesn't cost us that much, you know, to buy something used versus something new. And so she's very careful there too.
In this episode, I talk to Trey Bodge. Trey is an accomplished lifestyle journalist and television commentator who specializes in smart shopping, personal finance, parenting, and retail. She has appeared on television hundreds of times, including NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, Inside Edition, and CNBC, and her writing and expert commentary have been featured in Newsweek, Women's Day, Forbes, and many, many others. During our discussion, Trey and I run the gamut of smart shopping topics by chatting about introducing a child to a debit card, approaching the costs of kids eating out, encouraging thrift shopping, and alerting children to the dangers of frictionless purchases. We also take a notable sidestep into the allowance and chore debate. Yes, it still rages on. And Trey offers a noteworthy alternative to the share jar. All in all, our conversation underscores the importance of developing smart shopping habits as a prerequisite to becoming money comfortable. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Trey Bodge. Today, I am talking with Trey Bodge. Welcome, Trey.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is exciting. We spend a fair amount of time on talking about saving, and we certainly talk about spending smart, but I've never had a true consumer expert, a smart shopper on the show. So I'm excited to have you on here because I think you'll have a lot of good information to share with our audience. Before we jump into this, though, tell us a little bit about yourself, Trey.
Sure. I am a smart shopping expert. And what that means is I spend my time helping consumers save money on their day-to-day purchases and also saving money for the long run. I talk about parenting quite a bit. And I'm all over from Instagram, to I have my own site, everything's True Trey. And I have a bi-monthly newsletter that people can sign up for if you want my savings tips throughout the year. And then I also write for a variety of publications like Newsweek.com and CNN_.com. And then I do a lot of TV, radio, and podcasts where I talk about all the same stuff that I just mentioned.
Yeah, you really are on so many different media platforms. It's pretty impressive, and we're very lucky to have you here. So let's lay the groundwork because, you know, this is the Art of Allowance podcast. So what I like to do is with parents, and you're a parent of a 13-year-old girl, since you have some expertise in parenting as well, just kind of what you've done to what systems you have in place to help her become money smart. So why don't you tell us how that's started? And you can also kind of jump back to when you started and how you started. Any of that would be useful to know for our audience.
Sure. So I'm a firm believer that you can teach kids from a very young age about money. And I think that the earlier that they are comfortable with money, the better off they're going to be in the long run. So when she was very young, maybe 2 or 3, we played with coins. We played with dropping them into the piggy bank. I believe in sorting coins. Once they get a little bit older and they can differentiate between the size and then, as the years go on, the value. From a play standpoint, I think that can be very helpful, obviously disinfecting them as you do that. But then also the act of shopping. I feel like parents quite often want to leave the kids at home because they have shopping to do. They want to get in and out. But I also believe that shopping can be very, very instructive for kids. If you don't show kids how to transact, they don't understand what acquiring goods really means, right? So if a child is on the floor throwing a tantrum, asking for that XYZ thing that you won't buy them, they don't understand why they can't have it. And because I said so is not an adequate response. And so I feel that bringing them to the store, shopping with them, talking about prices, talking even about saving, using coupons or apps, showing them how all that works, and then transacting at the register, dipping your credit card, swiping your credit card, giving cash, explaining where that money came from, that mom or dad works very hard to earn this money, and that's where this money comes from. So that whole A to Z of shopping is so important for kids to understand. So when you do say no to something or yes to something, they have some basis to understand that whole process and like, oh, I get it why mom can't buy me that $500 video game console right now. So I've been doing that with my daughter from when she was very, very young. And then a few years ago, so she, you know, like you said, she's 13 now. A few years ago, I gave her a debit card. Greenlight is the company that I started working with back then because they offered a debit card for kids. You do have to pay $5 a month for it, but I was willing to do that until she turned 13. And now, obviously, many banks will offer a free debit card to kids if they have an account at the bank. So getting her comfortable with transacting on her own, explaining to her that, you know, you only have as much money as is in your account, so you can't spend more. And so teaching her to make really smart decisions. With that, we would take all of her financial gifts that she was given from friends and family. We would put that into her account. She could earn money around the house, and that would go into the account. And as a result, she's a very careful and smart shopper. She doesn't spend willy-nilly, so she will make very careful acquisitions when she's in the store, which is really nice to see that that's sunk in. And then, you know, next step will be a credit card. Not just yet, but I'd say in a couple of years. So we've been doing this together with her for a long time.
Yeah. With the Greenlight card, we have a similar type of card for our kids, and we break it up. Do you break yours up? So did you break your the money up into anything like the, what we have are the kind of three jar system, which I'm sure you're familiar with, the save and the share and the spend smart. Did you have anything like that set up, or do you just have it set up so that this is really a chance for her to practice shopping and getting used to using digital money?
Yeah. So I actually love that three jar system. We didn't do that with her, I think just because, you know, it didn't occur to me at the time when I was setting it up. Yeah. So the Greenlight card is specifically for her to spend money. And then we do have a savings account that we will put money into. Say if she receives a larger gift, that will go in there. And she knows that she can't touch that money. And she has asked numerous times, but she cannot. And that will be for later when she needs to maybe buy a used car or using it for college. And so we do have a save sort of function around money. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of, you know, I know people have sort of a share or a give. We address that more in terms of physical volunteering. So my husband volunteers at a college book sale. And so my daughter will go and work there sometimes with him. And so she understands the value of volunteering as well.
Yeah. Okay. That's accomplishing the exact same thing in arguably a more powerful way. So that's fantastic because giving your time is certainly very valuable. So that's excellent. I want to dig into this. I love this term that you have, the act of shopping.
Yeah.
Because I like the intentionality that's tied to it. Is it something I've discussed this with other guests on the podcast, and the importance is sometimes the resistance, and I'm sure you've run into this too. The resistance the parents will have will be, oh, I don't want to start talking to my kids at the age of two or three or even younger. But the reality is that they're going to be accompanying you on these shopping trips, and there's going to be money exchanged, whether it's through something that they completely can't understand, this card, or whether it's physical cash. And they're going to be either asking you questions or thinking about questions. And What I like about this idea of the act of shopping is you are bringing intentionality to what the, you know, what this is. And it's something that, regardless of whether it's going to be, you know, you're consuming something that you just want or whether you're consuming needs, it is an essential part of life. And that idea makes a lot of sense. And the fact that you are active with her from the get-go is really terrific. I love that term, act of shopping. You know,
yeah.
So when she's young. So how did that progress? Say before you got to this card where she has her debit card. So do you have any kind of stories of what you did between say ages, you know, 4 and 10, where maybe she has some money that either she's received through a gift and she's shopping with you? Like, what kind of tips could you provide to parents to help them help their kids stay empowered with the money so that they're making decisions, but that you're providing some kind of guidance for them to be smart shoppers?
Sure. So, you know, when she was really little, she loved stopping at that bank of vending machines that you might see at a Walmart or Target, you know, and you can get the little toy inside. And so, you know, if she had been good, we would give her a quarter and she could buy the little treat in there. And then we kind of ran into a little trouble with that. She wasn't happy with the color that came out and was acting, behaving badly. So, you know, I just said, until you can keep it together and accept what comes out of there as something great, like, if, you know, if it's your favorite color or not, like, we're not going to do that anymore. So that kind of gave her the opportunity to show us that she was ready. And so we started that back again. So that was maybe step one with the shopping. And then I would bring her to the store and give her a little bit of money. I would hand her a little bit of money to spend. Yep. You know, I said, you have $3 to spend at Target. And we'd go to the dollar bins and she would have to make, you know, very careful decisions. And then from the next step was, you know, taking those financial gifts and maybe dividing them up, putting some of the money in the bank account, putting some of the money in her wallet. So she loved having her wallet and having cash in her wallet. She still does. That makes her feel very satisfied that she has some of her own money physically to spend. And that was probably, you know, 8 years old, then maybe 9 years old or 10 or 11. I'm trying to remember exactly, but that's when we started with the debit card. I think it really depends on the child when you think they're ready. You know, some kids are independent earlier and they're walking around town with their friends younger. My daughter started when she was maybe around, I guess it was 10, when she was walking around town for a little bit during the day with her friends after school, and they would go shopping or they'd buy a snack. And so that's when I felt like, okay, she needs a debit card to use, and let's start there. And so it's really been based on her level of readiness. But I think those are kind of good steps to go with, from like the little bit of change to a couple dollars to more money, then to debit card, next will be credit card. But really tailoring it to each child, because every child is different.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Same thing happened with us with our kids. I noticed that in our case, we started an allowance with our older daughter at 5, but we actually started with her at 4, and it was a non-starter, but then it worked really well at 5, whereas the younger one, having seen her sister get this allowance, was totally ready at age 4. Right. Mm-hmm. So those things definitely. And I think the same thing happened, because we've moved both of them. They're now 16 and 14. And I think it was the same dynamic with regard to the digital card. The older one got it something like 11 or 12, and then the younger one had it 10 or 11, you know, a little bit earlier. And they show different different behaviors in terms of sharing and saving. I want to ask you, and you may have said this, and I apologize if I missed it, but with the debit card, okay, so now she has a debit card. What is she? Do you have a set amount that she gets for that, like on the debit card? And does she have responsibilities tied to the debit card? Because you mentioned, like, for example, she's out with friends. So is she responsible when she's out with friends having a bite to eat? Or how does that set up?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, we tried allowance tied to chores early on, and that just didn't work well. Mm-hmm. So we transitioned over to just chores, not tied to anything, and sort of chores in the spirit of you're a member of the family and we all pitch in.
And
depending on her schedule, like sometimes she has more time, sometimes she's really packed with, you know, stuff with dance and music and all that stuff, depending on what's happening. And so we kind of alter the chores depending on what her schedule is, homework load, and don't tie money to it. And instead, what's worked better is that we give her opportunities to earn around the house by doing certain tasks. And so, like, you know, and they're bigger tasks. It's like, oh, can you clean the outside of the windows on the first floor? We have a small house, so it's not like really big, a really big job, but it's big enough, you know. And or can you clean the inside of this car with the vacuum, you know? So we'll give her kind of bigger things and tie money to that. And that seems to work better for us. I mean, I would have loved to have had allowance, you know, every week, and that's the way it worked. It just didn't work well for us. And so then we have those financial gifts that she'll receive from family members, you know, because as they get older too, I think they get harder to buy for. At least her in particular, she's quite specific about what she likes, and she doesn't need a lot of things. And so family members will often give her money for spending money for her own things, and then we'll kind of just put that on the debit card for her. I do have a little bit of a different policy when it comes to food. Like if she's going downtown and meeting friends and she's having food, I'll give her extra money for that specifically, either, you know, in cash or on the debit card, just because I feel like we should pay for her to eat rather than her spending her own money to eat. I don't know. So that's kind of how we address the food question. But that's suddenly becoming expensive, which I have to kind of rethink, because there she's going downtown a lot more and they're going out to dinner. And I'm just like, oh, this is costing me a lot. So I got to figure out, got to find another solution for the food question.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, obviously this is the Art of Allowance podcast, so we talk about allowances a lot. But so you're talking about these, you know, we call them above and beyond chores, right? That's not my term, but and that makes a lot of sense. So the idea that you wouldn't pay for basic chores around the house, I think what's nice is I think generally there's a majority of parents that agree that makes sense. So the basic things, making your bed, cleaning the dishes, whatever it might be. But the opportunity to make money is good, and especially for things you might pay someone else to do or you might do yourself. So cleaning the car, you know, whatever, or doing the windows in the first floor, those kind of things teaches them that lesson. You know, that's that hard work is required often in order to get money. I think that's great. You know, it's interesting about the food thing, because so we've transitioned now. So our kids get a much larger allowance, and part of that allowance is a food amount. And the way we address the concern that you have is if let's just say that they want to go, we made dinner, but they want to go out with their friends, then they are going to have to pay for that, right? But if we were going out to dinner as a family and they were going out to dinner with their friends at the same time, that's where we might negotiate and say, okay, we'll cover that. But what's nice is with these cards is they just get what they're going to get, and then we can just reimburse them if it makes sense. And anytime they're going out other than that, they're making a discretionary choice, so they can, if they're going to go out and meet a friend and, you know, we have prepared dinner, then they have to pay for it, right? And so it's, you know, this is kind of the nice part about doing this podcast is everybody has different methods of doing it. And you know, I've talked to different parents for how they do it. That's just another perspective, because I could hear it in your voice, that idea that, you know, it starts to get expensive because because it's fun going out. I mean, it's probably our biggest splurge as a couple. So my wife and I love to go out to dinner, but, you know, we also realize that we can't do that every night. And
I thank you for that, actually, because that gives me something to think about in terms of how I should address this moving forward. And I think there's a big difference between having a chunk of money to spend when you go to a restaurant and you might buy more food than you normally would and get extra appetizers, you know, and that I think could possibly be happening. And that's maybe why it's becoming expensive. I like the idea of her paying for it herself. in some way, shape, or form. So I appreciate that, because this is definitely, sure. You know, as parents, we kind of hit these walls sometimes, and we think, oh, okay, that old thing isn't working. Like, let me figure out how to pivot here. And we're also getting to a point, you know, she's turning 14, and where we live, kids who are 14 or over can work. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're coming into that interesting place now where summer is coming and she doesn't want to have a whole summer full of camps. And my husband and I both work from home. And I'm like, you definitely can't lay around and sleep until one in the afternoon and hang out with your friends. Like, you know, that's great that I don't have to pay for camp, but I also don't want, you know, like a teenager laying around the house all day either. So, you know, my feeling is you're going to have to get a job and that's going to be the next thing. And, you know, so she'll be earning her own money as well, which I'm really excited for those lessons too.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to ask you, I want to jump into online shopping, but before I do that, I do want to ask you if you have, I'd love to hear kind of success that you've had with her, because I'm always looking for this as a parent and dealing with our kids, like in terms of smart shopping that you've noticed, like just some story that made you proud as a parent that you feel like you imparted on her that came around.
Yeah. So something comes to mind immediately. Her grandmother, her two grandmothers and her great aunt all gave her spending money for a holiday. I think it was maybe Christmas last year. And then they offered to they were coming to town and they were all going to go shopping. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to go to the mall and they were all excited to take her shopping because she loves clothes and shopping and all of that. And when they came back, they all said, your daughter is the smartest shopper we know besides you. She was so careful. She was so thoughtful about those purchases. She compared prices. She was so specific about what she bought, and she didn't spend all the money that they had given her. And they were so impressed by her whole methodology. And so I knew that I had done it right. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. And then the other thing is, you know, as a family, we love thrifting, and she's really into fashion, but thankfully she loves to buy secondhand. And so we go to Goodwill and Salvation Army and we shop for things secondhand, which allows her to change her mind a lot as she changes her style. It doesn't cost us that much, you know, to buy something used versus something new. And so she's very careful there too. And will spend her money very wisely at the secondhand store. And I insist that she buy her own clothes when we're going thrifting, unless it's something that she really, really needs. Like she needs a pair of jeans and I will pay for that for her. But otherwise, because she changes her style so much, but it's like $2 for a new shirt versus, yep, you know, 45 at the mall. And so we save a lot of money on clothes that way. And I like to watch her shop so carefully there too.
That's fantastic. And this I owe to my wife has introduced my kids to thrift. They do a lot of the thrift shopping. I'm curious, do you, and they also do you ever do clothes swaps? So like the moms do that, but she started doing this with the teenagers, which I thought was incredible because then there's no money exchange, just clothes.
Yeah, actually, I mean, nothing official, but they do. She will come home with a couple new things from her friend's house. And I'm like, where did that come from? And, you know, her friend might say, oh, I'm kind of tired of this. Do you want it? And they do. Then a friend will come over and they'll do the same thing. So, yeah. So there is an informal swapping that goes on, which is really nice to see, because then she feels like she has new things and her friend does, too.
Yeah. Does your daughter do anything with Depop? Are you familiar with that service?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she's really into it, and she's always looking for clothing there too. And so that's another thing. I do find that, you know, there are good deals there and good deals on, you know, sites like ThredUp and things like that. But the Salvation Army and Goodwill are far better. Yeah. And then we tend to avoid the vintage clothing stores that are very curated. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a great appreciation for walking into, you know, a beautifully curated vintage clothing store, but I know I'm going to pay five times more there than I will at the Goodwill. And we're quite good at finding good things at the Salvation Army and Goodwill. So that's what we tend to lean towards. And then if we go into one of those vintage stores, she's always like, oh my God, it's so expensive here. And I'm like, well, you're paying for the owner's amazing taste, you know, but I feel like we can do that on our own. So we tend to avoid that.
Yeah, that's a great lesson to get across. We just went to a 50th birthday party and it was a 70s theme. And I discovered that because I tried to find some stuff at our Goodwill, but I ended up having to go to one of the vintage stores. Luckily, I found some pants with a stain on it that were marked down, you know, and they were trying to send these. I mean, these pants, you know, they probably got them for 50 cents, you know, yeah. And luckily they were marked down half the price, like $12.50. And I have an incredible neighbor who can get a stain out of anything. So, and she did. I was able to make that work, and so that was really nice. But that's great. It's really, I love the, it's just like, these are the things. It's like this idea of teaching them how to thrift shop, and that if you put a little extra time, you can find, you know, and that must just be that you've done that with her, and so it's just experience of just being patient. So she must be a pretty patient shopper.
Yeah, she's patient, but she'll, you know, it's fun for me to help her find the things that she wants. Like she'll look at Depop or follow certain fashion, you know, young fashion influencers on Instagram, and she'll come into the Goodwill with a very specific idea. Like the last one was, okay, I want high-waisted bell-bottom jeans, which was a total departure from what she's ever worn. But it was fun for me to go on that mission to find them for her. And they were $5. And then we brought them home and she painted them. She painted flowers on them. And that's kind of the other thing that I really appreciate is sort of the customization aspect of it, where, and we've done this for many years, where you could work to make something your own. We have a sewing machine and we'll make adjustments to things. And I think that's another way to live frugally is, you know, if you find something that's inexpensive, but it's a little bit too big, you can fix it, you know, you can change the buttons on that coat if you don't like it. And that's something else that we enjoy doing together.
Yeah, I like that. I was also looking at a post of yours, and you were talking about the importance of embracing bargains. That's a big part of what you talk about. But you also mentioned that at times it's worth the splurge, and you know, particularly for quality. So I'm wondering, is that something that you've had some success with, your getting that across to your daughter too? Because I think it's a really important message that it's not always about price.
True. And yeah, we do talk about that. And thankfully, because, you know, kids grow so fast that I'm not going to necessarily spend $80 on a pair of really good jeans for her. I may do that for myself, but I explain to her why I'm doing that. And then we try to find them for her at the thrift store.
That's funny.
You know, I try to avoid a lot of fast fashion for both of us for that reason, because the quality quite often isn't there. So we do talk about quality, but because I think kids grow so fast, it's just often not worth the investment. And, you know, kids in town will all be wearing the, you know, big chunky white Nikes that are $90 or $100. And I've said to her, just like, not going to happen. So choose some Vans that are cheaper, or Converse, or, you know, and we'll wait for a sale. And that's the other thing. So that's maybe another answer to your question, is that, you know, if we are going for quality or a specific brand because it's in style or it's something that she likes, we will wait until that item's on sale. So she'll have to wait for those Converse high tops or whatever it may be before we buy them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was actually, and I think that's great advice about the kids, because they change so much so fast. But I think sometimes if there is a specific thing you are looking for, it does make sense. But your point about the clothes is a really good one, which is that they're moving in and out of clothes so fast that to spend that kind of money on clothes for them is not necessarily the best idea.
Yeah. I mean, for quality, but then also for brand, I think, you know, some kids are really obsessed with brands and, you know, quote unquote, everybody's wearing these XYZ sneakers. And part of the, you know, the things that we've talked about over the years is that just, we're not doing that. I'm not paying that for those sneakers. So she, in a way, has become more, more bold with her style choices or more independent. Mm-hmm. Because she knows that she's not going to get those sneakers. And, you know, she'll have friends over and there'll be a pile of those exact sneakers that every kid supposedly is wearing. And she won't have those ones. Yeah. And she's not ashamed of that, which I think is really lovely to see. She's proud that she found something apart from that trend. And then maybe she'll start her own trend. And sure. So I've been trying to teach her that rather than, you know, why do you want those same sneakers that every single kid has anyway? You know, why don't right. you just do something, you know, unique, that unique to you? And she, that's kind of her, become her personal brand in a way. Like, kids expect her to have like something that's different rather than the same.
Yep. That makes perfect sense. So I want to ask you a little bit about online shopping. I interviewed Mark and Kimberly Barnes. They're the not so perfect parents, but we were talking about, so we have this concept for called the waiting period. So if the kids are saving for something, they have to have it in their they're saving in a save jar for something, right? And it could be a digital save jar. But if there's something that when they have larger amounts of money, they could very easily blow, you know, $100 on something impulse buy, but we put a restriction on that, which is if it's $50 or more and you haven't been saving for it, you have to wait a week. And if it's $100 or more, you have to wait 2 weeks. We call that the waiting period. And they had this interesting idea, which they use this with Amazon. So they use the Amazon wish list and they enforce a waiting period using the wish list, which I thought was a good idea. But I remember in my research on you, you had this Amazon historical pricing tool or data that might help you determine when it's a good time to buy, because this kind of gets into the sales and being a smart consumer. And I was wondering if that still exists, if that makes sense, because that, I think the combination of the wish list plus that tool could be really useful to not only to parents, but to kids.
It was a really good tool, and it's, I don't think they're around anymore. Mm. I think they really struggled to kind of get the word out. And I, and friends who do what I do are always trying to share, the information on that site, and I'm blanking right now what it was called, but I don't think it's around anymore. But you know, the idea is still doable. So, you know, I think using the wish list is a great idea. I think that to curb impulse buying, if you find something online that you really like, walking away, coming back the next day, that's a really good tool as well. And then just comparison pricing. With, you bring up Amazon, and we, you know, so many of us shop so much on Amazon that I think we assume that we're getting the best price on Amazon, and quite often we're not. Mm-hmm. Amazon has great pricing on some things and not on others. And so I always advise people to comparison shop and see if you can find a better deal someplace else. Also shop by using a browser extension to see if there are coupons or cash back opportunities wherever you're shopping, and then make your decision from there. You know, oh, I can get 10% cash back here and free shipping.
Yeah.
Do I buy it here or the other place? I just think it's always worth that extra 30 seconds or so to see if you can find a better price someplace else, and then giving yourself a little breathing room between now and that purchase time to determine whether you really need that item or not.
Yeah, that makes sense. Does your daughter actively shop on Amazon? I always worry about it's the frictionlessness of Amazon that's potentially dangerous. And is that something you allow her to do, or you just said, you know what, we're not going to do that? What's your thought on that?
Well, I don't give her access to our Prime account. So for that reason, I think it can be dangerous, but she is such a careful shopper that I probably could.
Yeah.
At this point, maybe not a couple of years ago, but so she does have to go through me when she wants to buy something. And then we, you know, we exchange money or in whatever form, when she wants to buy something. But, you know, I think, you know, the issue that we run into is the expectation that everything has to be available tomorrow, you know, and I think I really regret that Amazon has done this, that they've led this charge that we all have to have our products tomorrow. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I would love to see the studies on what the environmental impact is and also the emotional impact of having to have something tomorrow. I just think it's absolutely not necessary. And it creates a difficult scenario for parents because kids expect things right away and there's no waiting time. And I try to explain that, you know, when I was a kid, when I wanted to order something through whatever the Sears catalog, you know, it would come 3 weeks later, you know, and it's just so different now. And that expectation, I think, is really not a healthy place to be and a healthy way to shop. And so I think that's really unfortunate, actually. I'm trying to teach a little bit of patience along with careful shopping.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think you made me think, as one of the things we talk about a lot is money empowerment, giving kids control. So immediately when you said that you, if you did give your daughter access, you wouldn't be that worried about her. I thought that's a very good point, because that is what we're trying to do, is teach them. And if she were to make a mistake, you would catch her, you would have a discussion, and that would be a low stakes mistake, and better off that she makes it under your purview than she goes off on her own before she hasn't. And so she's had the chance to make those mistakes, which is very much in line with our, with the philosophy that we discuss on this podcast all the time. But it is a very good point, because that just that the frictionlessness is really problematic, and we have become spoiled by Amazon to a large extent. And, I think it's good to, it's probably a good idea to get that across to our kids, that that expectation is unrealistic and unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do really appreciate the green light card, the current card, what, you know, whatever one you're using, if you are using this with kids, that the parents can oversee the transactions and ask, like, okay, where, you know, why did you buy that much at Starbucks or whatever it is? And, you know, I think things like Starbucks, for kids in their tweens and teens, that's a killer.
Yeah.
You know, they're buying a $4 whatever. And so I talked to her about that too, about choices. And it's like, okay, we're not going to buy another $4 whatever for another couple weeks. This isn't, you know, and she has friends who are buying these things every day. And that is just the worst money habit right there. It's just like throwing money down the toilet. And I talk to adults about this too. It's like, do you realize, did you look at your, you know, not to blame Starbucks, but like any, whatever your fancy coffee place is or your fancy lunch place that you're going to every day, did you ever sit down to look at how much you're spending every month, and how could you maybe do something differently, utilize the Keurig machine that your office offers, or bringing lunch from home? Imagine how much money you could save in 1 month simply by changing that habit. And so trying to teach our kids that early is really instructive, I think, because if they go off to college or start off in the workplace and they have a $4 and $8 a day Starbucks habit, you're just setting them up on the wrong foot, I think.
Yeah, it's a good point. And these services, you know, Starbucks as an example, this is not just to pile on Starbucks, like you said, they're just one example, but they really have designed the systems, the apps, to keep you shielded from what you're actually spending. You know, my wife and I recently did a cash week just to go through the purchases to see the physical money that you're spending on every purchase. And it is helpful to do that from time to time, because, you know, when you, we know it's much harder to physically get rid of cash in your hand than it is to swing an app and, or swing your phone in front of a scanner.
Yep. Yeah. I think, you know, along these lines, you know, because I don't want to pile on Starbucks, but like DoorDash or Seamless, like those are actually becoming a new problem on our end, where, you know, she'll ask, oh, I have a friend over, can we do DoorDash? I'm like, nope.
Yep.
You cannot. We have food in the house. So you, and they're like, well, we want pizza. And it's like, okay, well, if it's dinner time, let's talk about that. But like, you know, we need to discuss this, and can we make it at home? And if not, okay, everybody's got to eat, so maybe we can figure out how this works for everybody. But this kind of willy-nilly DoorDash problem, I can imagine where in our town, like, you know, she has many friends who have their parents' credit card and they're just DoorDashing left and right. And that's another money killer. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, please just slow down. Like, let's see what we can make at home and see if we can work this out a different way.
Yeah, we had a Postmates, you know, semi, it was a hardly really, a, it wasn't really a nightmare, but it was, she ordered, I forget what it was. You know, she just didn't think about it because she was with her friends and they don't have a system in place to control the money with some kind of controls on the money, like an allowance where there's a cap on it. So they ordered Postmates from, I forget where it was. And I think it was like McDonald's. I think they were pancakes. Anyway, it ended up costing $50 in the end. It was crazy. And we did get some money back because the way that it was set up just was not very clear, but it was very instructive. And that we canceled her Postmates account. We had a long discussion about it. It was actually a terrific lesson because it was so painful for her to realize, one, we don't typically just don't go to places like that. Two, that was crazy to have it delivered, and it cost more to have it delivered than it did for the actual item. Mm-hmm. So the pain of that mistake was actually, in the grand scheme of things, was very instructive and hugely helpful because that eliminated that as an option, at least for now.
Yeah.
And because those services, it's such a good point because you can very easily just get very lazy and start having stuff sent all the time. And there are friends that are doing that, just like you said, like there are the friends who are going to Starbucks every single day. And that is the reason why we do what we have these conversations, is so that more of us as parents work with our kids to help them understand that, you know, there's a certain amount of scarcity that's involved with money, and they have to learn that from a young age.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I, good. You know, I said, blame it on me. I'm the bad guy. Like, I don't, you know, because in the teenage years, they're embarrassed by this, you know, especially if they have friends who are just charging away left and right. And I'm just like, it's just not going to happen. Like, we're not going to do that. So I'm happy to make everyone some pasta or, you know, I see a lot of overspending across the board. And, you know, I feel like she's that kid who's like, oh no, my mom won't let me DoorDash. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry if this is embarrassing for you, but, you know, we try to be kind of like the cool parents in other ways. Like, I'll take everybody to the Goodwill and we can all go thrifting together, you know, like try to do something to make up for it. But it's just like, you can just say, you know, my mom, and my dad aren't going to go for that. So sorry.
That's a smart move. You might as well give them the opportunity to make you the bad guy. And ultimately, she probably, I think, you know, they'll be upset about it. But when they do think about it, I think they tend to get it. So
yeah, I think she does.
Okay, so Trey, are you ready for our fast and fun round questions here on the Art of Allowance podcast?
Yes, I think.
So the first one is, what does the term money empowered mean to you?
In terms of kids or adults?
Anything you want.
I'll frame it in terms of kids. I think money empowered means that you have some money to spend. You are empowered to spend that money, but you are also smart enough to spend it wisely.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, next question. What is the best investment of time or money that you've ever spent on your kid?
Music lessons. Yeah, she's musical and has been from a very early age. And so we will pay for that until she leaves the house. And we don't care how much it costs because she has grown and improved so much. It's in her. And we really believe that it makes her happy and is fulfilling for her as well.
Wonderful. Okay, what advice to your daughter do you most hope that she will heed?
Smart shopping. I hope she's a smarter shopper than even me when she leaves the house.
Yeah, well, it sounds like she's well on her way, so that's great. Okay, now, this is a fun one. If you could transmit a message that everyone would see, so it could be sky written, it could be on billboards everywhere, but it's got to fit on a billboard. It's got to be short and sweet. What would that message say?
Stop overspending.
That message is a good one. Very appropriate.
My other one, maybe there's two, if I have room, I would say stop keeping up with the Joneses.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Because that alone makes me insane. Seeing people fall victim to what their neighbors are doing. They have to have a nicer car because their friends have one. Taking on a bigger mortgage than they can afford because they think they should bump up to the next size house. It cycles through everything we do. And it's really the same. Stop overspending and stop keeping up with the Joneses. It's the same message. Live to your budget and live by your means and not anyone else's.
Yeah, it's an unwinnable game, that competition.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is one parenting and or money smarts or consumer smart shopping book that you go back to or that you gift the most often?
I have to say I don't.
Okay.
So I'm lucky enough to have many friends who are money experts and CFPs, and my aunt's a financial planner. So I actually follow personal advice and I don't have a specific book that I follow. And I also feel like, while I'm sure there are many, many amazing books out there, and my friends who are authors are probably cringing right now, I haven't recommended their specific book, but I feel like it's hard to find one book that fits for your family and your family's needs, because everyone is different. So I think you can take lessons from different podcasts and books and create your own system that works for your family.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. You got to curate your own life, so that is sensible. Okay, so Trey, this has been great. I mean, you've provided some great information. I love listening to someone who's got a brain like yours, really thinking smart about spending money. So how, you mentioned a little bit in the beginning, but how can people find you on social media and the web? What's the easiest way?
Sure. So I am True Trey almost everywhere. So my website is truetrey.com. I have a bi-monthly newsletter where I share timely shopping tips, links to sales, things like that. And then I'm True Trey on Instagram. I share budget living, frugal living tips pretty much every day, or 4 days a week, 5 days a week. Twitter, same thing. Facebook, same thing. So whatever your favorite platform is, I'm True Trey on that platform. And you will hopefully learn something new regularly is my goal.
Yeah, she is very easy to find. So that's terrific. And is there any action you'd like people to take that would be helpful for you?
For me, I'm trying to build my Instagram because my goal is to build my Instagram to get to that point where I can take advantage of the swipe up technology, because there are so many more things I could share with people if I had that access, and I'm just under 10K.
Okay.
And so it's a goal that's like a very selfish goal of mine, and feel free to edit it out if you want to.
No, we'll keep it in there.
Something that I would love to do, so I can do more sharing.
Great. Okay. Then we'll put that, all those links, all that information we'll include in the show notes. And no, this is the opportunity to not be bashful, this part of the show. So I'm asking you specifically whatever would be helpful, and that's a great answer. So, well, Trey, I really appreciate you taking the time. This was a lot of fun for me. I learned a lot, and I know our listeners have learned a lot as well. So thanks again for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really fun.
Another fun conversation on the Art of Allowance podcast. I hope you enjoyed that. I know I did. Just a couple of points to wrap up. Trey's point about Amazon creating a culture in which we expect things tomorrow is a very good one. And we should all make it a point to talk to our kids about issues with this, like careful shopping, patience, thinking, externalities, those kind of things. And I wasn't surprised, as you might imagine, that chores tied to allowance didn't work out for her and her daughter. She wanted to make it work, you could tell. And of course, I wonder if we had talked before she put that in place, whether her allowance program might have stuck. But if you're interested in delving more into this, you might want to check out my blog post, "This is Why Your Kids Need an Allowance and Why Most Allowance Programs Don't Work," because that why is really important in order to make that allowance stick. And that is a wrap, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Art of Allowance podcast. Please subscribe to our show on whatever platform you listen to help me have more conversations like this with experts and parents, and sometimes both, who are interested in helping you raise your own money smart child. You can find out more about our movement at themoneymammals.com. The Money Mammals is our program to get kids excited about money smarts when they're young. And with our Saving Money is Fun Kids Club, we also partner with financial institutions that want to stand out in the communities that they serve by connecting with families, both kids and parents. And while you're on our site, you can also get a copy of the book that gave rise to this podcast, The Art of Allowance, along with some great free financial resources. Of course, please consult with a financial or investment professional before engaging in any decisions that might affect your own financial well-being. And until next time, I wish you and your family well on your own money smart journey. Thanks for listening.